While President Biden was meeting with leaders of the G7 in England today, the pressures of domestic politics were rising here in the U.S. A deal on infrastructure is on the horizon, but it is not clear that the president or even Democrats are going to sign on to it.
And Democratic outrage is growing on news that the Trump Justice Department subpoenaed Apple for the phone data of lawmakers connected to the Russia investigation. Let's start there with Rick Klein, political director for ABC News. Hi, Rick.
Hey, great to be with you.
And Maya King, national politics reporter for Politico. Hi, Maya.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So on MSNBC last night, House Intelligence Committee Chairman Adam Schiff called for an investigation after it became known that Trump's attorney general had secretly seized his and his committee's phone data in an attempt to find the source of leaks in the investigation of Trump's connections to Russia. Here is Congressman Adam Schiff.
It's extraordinary, maybe unprecedented, for the department to seek records like this of a member of Congress or staff of a member of Congress, to do so in a partisan way, to do so when they're investigating him, to do so openly calling on his department. It's hard to express just how shocking an abuse of power this really is.
Rick, put this story into context for us. Is it unprecedented? I mean, both the Trump and Obama administrations pursued journalists who they saw as leakers. So what's notable here and what effect does it have?
What's different here is we're talking about duly elected members of Congress, a whole different.
Did we just lose Rick?
Rick?
With members of Congress is when they're personally being investigated for corruption. Can you guys hear me?
Yes, please continue.
Should we go on to Maya?
Yeah,
let's see if
Rick
can get
Maya.
His connection in place. Maya, let's pick this up with you. Politico is reporting that the former president, Donald Trump, he felt vindicated this week after an inspector general concluded that Trump did not clear Lafayette Square in front of the White House last June to take a photo in front of a burnt-out church, if you remember that. And this morning, you know, we didn't hear Republicans rush to condemn the Trump Justice Department for subpoenaing those lawmaker records. How are you reading into this?
Well, I think this is part of a broader pattern with the former president of sort of weaponizing the agencies and other items just kind of under his purview against his perceived enemies. I think that's exactly what we saw with the Department of Justice, and especially not just with Democrats, but also with reporters and members of the media. I imagine he certainly, there were reports after last summer all about how what happened at Lafayette Square was very much, you know, a part of his own plan. And yet now he's certainly feeling vindicated because we've discovered that it really wasn't. And so I think, you know, this is just, again, a broader pattern of sort of how the former president has really shifted things in Washington to make, I think, a lot of us a lot more skeptical of what these ulterior motives are. But we'll still be able to it remains to be seen exactly what the outcome of this next investigation will be for his relationship with DOJ as it relates to Democrats and members of the media.
And I will note that we are still talking about the former president, even though he is the former president. So that is useful to him in that way. A group of 10 moderate Senate Republicans and Democrats have come up with a compromise deal to pay for infrastructure improvements in this country. I spoke with one of them, Montana Democrat John Tester, about it this morning. He said it's not going to be easy to pass in the Senate.
I think it's going to take more than just 10 Republicans. I think the Republicans will tell you that, because quite honestly, there's no guarantee we're going to keep all the Democrats.
And one of the reasons, Maya, they may not keep all the Democrats is because Tester told me this is a traditional infrastructure bill. There's a lot that's not in there. What else are we learning today?
Well, I think we're starting to really see these splits along ideological lines. I think the senator is right to say this is a much more traditional bill. And what progressives in Congress have been saying for a while is that the moment that we find ourselves in requires a much bigger and much more expensive infrastructure bill, that the U.S. government is going to need to be willing to spend more. And it seems like it just, according to the readouts from these conversations between moderate Democrats and Republicans, particularly in the Senate, that's kind of the hangup here, is just how much money the government is willing to spend on this and what they're willing to spend it on and where they're willing to get that money from, whether it's COVID relief or taxes on the wealthy. And so I mean, if they do emerge with a more traditional infrastructure bill, I think what we can expect to see, quite frankly, are a number of progressives threatening not to vote for it. In fact, we've already seen that. Some progressives in Congress have already said, you know, don't really count on our vote here if you're not willing to stretch yourself to actually pay for the things that we're asking for. So, you know, I think us in Washington are used to it being infrastructure week for weeks and weeks on end. And I don't know if that's going to change anytime soon, especially as conversations just continue to unfold around exactly what will fall under the purview of this bill, which just still seems to be rather unclear.
But Rick, at some point, President Biden is going to have to make a decision here, right, on whether to accept a smaller deal with Republicans or use budget maneuvers to pass his more expansive infrastructure plans with just Democratic votes. I mean,
that's exactly right.
Are we getting to that point?
Very close to it. I mean, look, Biden is trying to keep both paths open. He's trying to say, look, we've got bipartisanship over here. We have a partisan path over there. One complicating factor is, though, it's not clear that he could even get all the Democrats on board for some of these proposals. So he may not have that backup option. But I think now that we're past at least two deadlines that the White House has set, we're fast getting into the place where Joe Biden's going to have to come down and say, this is what a package looks like. And keep in mind, this bipartisan deal right now, it's got elements in it that Biden himself has rejected, including the idea of raising the gas tax and indexing it to inflation. He considers that a tax on people making less than $400,000 a year. So it's not clear that even for all these talks that it's going to go anywhere. And I think this next couple of weeks, probably before the 4th of July, we'll know up or down infrastructure either happening or not.
And what's not getting done in Washington, Maya, as the White House seeks this bipartisan infrastructure deal?
Well, a number of Biden's top legislative priorities domestically have kind of hit snags here. I mean, I think we can point to voting rights legislation. That was one of his biggest targets, I think, of this year to try to get done. And with comments from Senators Manchin and Sinema coming out against the filibuster, that kind of renders that legislation, dead in the water, unfortunately. I think also conversations around policing have hit pretty rough snag over the last couple of days. We have some reporting out to suggest that the notion of, or the provision, I should say, of qualified immunity is still a sticking point in these negotiations between legislators. And now we've got a lot more involvement from law enforcement groups that have also said, you know, from their knowledge of the current state of negotiations, they would not support this bill either. So the Biden administration has come forward, of course, with its first 100 days with a very, very bold legislative plan to try to push through legislation, particularly as it relates to equity and racial equity. And yet, as it stands right now, not saying that they absolutely are impossible, but I think it's what we're learning now is that it's just going to be much more of a process if it happens at all. And it's just going to take a lot longer and require a lot more going back to the table and sitting down and potentially watering down a lot of this legislation.
And so, Rick, where do you see Biden's agenda right now with these snags, as Maya talked about?
Well, I really think this is a pivotal moment for the Biden presidency, even as he continues this foreign trip, because you're at a potential inflection point where he's going to have to decide, do I pursue bipartisanship? Do I take smaller deals, or do I continue to try to pursue bigger transformational goals? When you see the jitters around the economy, when you see Democrats turning on themselves a little bit, you get a sense of some of the angst around this. And I think Biden has taken as much of a hands-off approach as he could to this legislative process, certainly a lot less heavy-handed than his predecessor in terms of dictating what happens. But he's going to have to come down. And I think he has this majority. It's an extremely narrow majority. He knows where the red lines are. The contours haven't really changed of those limitations. It's become clear, though, that there's growing frustration in the left of his party, among moderates. And this is a time for leadership. It's a time where he's going to have to decide, this is what I can take, and this is what I think the best course is.
Rick, you mentioned the president's trip to Europe. How do you think that is shaping up so far? Beyond theater, do you think his first foreign trip will have much of an impact?
Well, I think coming with a deliverable, actually delivering 500 million doses of COVID vaccine is a powerful signal. And of course, it's substantively important as well as symbolically that the America First is out, and instead you've got America, as he says, America's back, trying to show that there's open hands of cooperation. I think the G7 meetings are likely to be a little more tense than the meeting with the Prime Minister of Great Britain. We saw Boris Johnson there, just enthusiastic about this new relationship and the opportunities for cooperation. And then I think everything's going to be defined with the Vladimir Putin meeting toward the end of this trip. So there's so much riding on that. But it's a big moment for him to set the agenda as opposed to just react to events.
Maya, we have less than a minute here. Why don't you give us your thoughts on this meeting with Putin and what the president needs to accomplish?
Well, I think really it'll be reestablishing a bit more of a firm hand between Russia and the United States. Of course, there's a precedent now with the former president, who, of course, is looming over things still in Washington, of a more friendly relationship here. But the president has been very clear that he not only wants to establish more leadership there, but also in noting the issues that America and Russia have faced in the past.
Maya King, national politics reporter for Politico, and Rick Klein, political director for ABC News. Thanks to you both.
Thank you.
Thanks.